All right, so this talk is about the theory of pattern distributions. The outline is as follows. I will try to identify our goals in physics in that context, then talk a little bit about the challenges for the theory if we are interested in the subject, and finish with a summary. And I'd like to acknowledge the work of my collaborators, Jos van Maasren and Andreas Vogt. So, okay. No, here we are. One up. Okay. So let's, for the sake of this talk, focus on deep inelastic scattering, because this is where we do have high-precision data. Then two questions which we can address is the structure of the proton, which is parameterized in terms of pattern distributions. Cross-section is given in terms of structure functions, and the scaling violations of these structure functions, they are basically at the origin of QCD, and by now provide a really good precision test of the framework of perturbative QCD. And the pattern distributions which we use to describe this cross-section are basically a gluon distribution, most notably at small x, the quark valence and C distributions. And it was stressed also by a lot of previous speakers that this is important input which we can get from deep inelastic scattering for LHC phenomenology if we want to do Higgs or SUSY searches. And the question, it all boils down to the question, how well do we know these unpolarized and also the polarized pattern distributions, and what is really the error which we can give based on present or future accumulated data which we can give on these quantities. Other issues, alpha S and deep inelastic scattering, which has also been discussed already in the talk by Sigi Bethke. This is one of the fundamental parameters of the standard model, and the determination from inclusive deep inelastic scattering is in a sense an ideal case, because doesn't depend on any effects of the hadronic final state. And again, the question is, how well do we know it, and what kind of error can we give? So let's start with the latter. That plot has been discussed to a large extent already by Sigi Bethke. To remind you, the number for unpolarized deep inelastic scattering is up here. Already by now, it has a very very small error, and it's likely to dominate the determination of the world average. If we just look at what the experimental collaborations at here have been doing, there was next to leading order QCD analysis of HERA data for F2, and that came up with a particular value of alpha S. And I just want to draw your attention to the theoretical error which is associated with this number, which is already by now almost a factor of 2.5 larger than the experimental uncertainty. So in the future, what we would like to see, what we envisage with the high precision HERA data from round 2, that in 2006, with the next-to-next leading order QCD analysis, we can really match the experimental error, which will again go down by a factor of 2, and come up with a theory error of the same order. So let's look at structure function measurement. That plot has already been shown by Günter Wolf, and by now we already have high precision experimental data which is used by the collaborations in the next to leading order analysis. Until 2006, or say summer 2007, HERA will accumulate much higher statistics. The interesting region in this plot is that HERA will also hopefully be covering the region which is by now been covered by the fixed target experiments, so that from HERA data alone you will be able to get a complete range in X and Q squared for a determination, and which you can then use to extract precision pattern densities. So that's the current status of say an H1 or a ZEUS analysis. And since it all boils down to the uncertainties which are associated to these quantities, it might be worth spending a few sentences on just listing all the possible choices which go in such extraction of pattern distributions from experimental data. First of all, there is the whole issue associated with the treatment of the experimental errors. But then another point is what kind of functional form do you put for the pattern distributions? It might be interesting to study the parameterization bias which you have. Another point is the scale dependence, depends on factorization, renormalization scale, which has generally been quoted as a theoretical uncertainty. Another point is how do you treat the heavy quarks in that context? Because of course, in deep elastic scattering, you also have large number of charm production. I'll come back to that in a minute. But if we look at uncertainties and try to assess the contribution, the possible contributions of a theory, might be nice to break these uncertainties up a little bit into the various contributions. So this is from a study by Michel Gottje. A similar analysis has been done by Verone, Paco, and Sommer. On the left, you have the error on the gluon distribution, and on the right, you have the error on the quark C distribution. And you have the various sources, like for the quark distribution, you have the statistical systematic errors, the input error, the error which is associated to the analysis. And down here, you have the errors which are associated with the scale uncertainty. So if you vary factorization and renormalization scale in the range of q over square root of 2 and 2 times square root of 2 times q, and what you see is that for the quark C distribution, already now the scale error dominates. Whereas for gluons, this is still sort of comparable with the rest of the errors, but with increasing experimental precision, this error will also be dominating in the future. So as an upshot, I would say there is improvement of a theory needed, and theory improvement is associated with the calculation of the three-loop splitting functions. If you look at polarized deep inelastic scattering, the situation is the same. This is a polarized gluon density extracted in a global fit, and if you break up the error associated to the polarized gluon density, then down here you have the error from the scale uncertainty. So there the situation is similar, and also here an improvement of a theory is justified. And I should say that contrary to the unpolarized case, you would also have to improve on your knowledge of the structure function G1 for charm production, which hasn't been calculated so far. So if we look at the whole set of twist two pattern distributions, then we can say it would be nice to improve our knowledge not only on the unpolarized in pattern distributions, say gluon and quark C distribution, but also on the longitudinally polarized distributions which we get, say, from Slack, Hermes, or COMPASS experiments. And in addition, we might also try to learn more on the up to now still undetermined transversely polarized quark distribution, which will be accessible, say, to Hermes or Rick. And if we are interested in structure of the proton, then this should sort of be the full picture which we are looking at. If we try to move further in theory, then first question is what's been done so far, and this is sort of an indicative list of the achievements associated with QCD corrections for deep inelastic structure functions with massless quarks. The leading order anomalous dimensions have been calculated already more than 30 years ago by the Institute's director and Frank Wilczek. Then we had in the late 70s and early 80s, we had the next leading order calculation been done in two-loop anomalous dimensions, and also two-loop structure function FL was calculated, but it was only done correctly then, say, in 1990. And since then, we've been moving on to next leading order in QCD. In 92, we had from Zylstra and van Nerven the complete two-loop calculation for structure function F2, F3, and FL, which included the two-loop coefficient functions. And at the three-loop level, we have some fixed Mellin moments calculated by Fermarsen and collaborators. And these fixed Mellin moments have been used in all the phenomenological studies, which we heard about so far. For instance, they've been used by Andreas Vogt and Willy van Nerven to derive sort of approximate three-loop splitting functions, which assumed a particular functional form for the unknown three-loop splitting function and tried to fit this functional form then to the moments, to the known moments, and derived some sort of ansatz which could be used in phenomenology then. Okay, so if we continue, this is the same list for deep elastic structure functions with massive quarks. For the neutral current, the complete order alpha s is known, and also the complete order alpha s squared is known, so there we are in good shape. For the charge current, the complete order alpha s corrections are known, whereas for the order alpha s squared corrections, we only know the leading logs associated with the heavy quark mass m. So there the full calculation is still lacking. And there are various, there have been various papers on over the last years, how to treat, how to perform a resummation of the large logarithms, which appear in, which appear for these heavy quark structure functions. And some of them are used in some of these prescription or treatments are used in the global fits, which we heard about. But I would say the task is still to perform, to include this, say for a neutral current, to include this information about the full information about the heavy quark structure function and perform a fast NNLO evolution in the PDF determinations. So why is this important? If you look at the HERA data, for instance, then the amount of charm in the total structure function data is, say, between 10 and almost 30%, or going even higher to 35%. And this the associated process is, say, boson-gluon fusion. So this is driven by the gluon distribution. In that sense, heavy quark structure functions, data on heavy quark structure function, provide a very clean probe for the gluon distribution. On the other hand, you have to worry a bit about these large logarithms, which are associated with a diagram like this, because this is this diagram by itself is infrared safe, it's infrared finite, and the infrared singularity which you would have in a massless diagram like this is regulated by the mass of the heavy quark. So there are, as I was saying, there are possible, various possible treatments for the heavy quark component in your structure functions. If you take if you're at say low scales, you might say I'm perfectly fine if I have just NF light flavors plus a heavy quark of mass m, and this should be a perfectly this description should be perfectly fine at low scales when you're close to the threshold of the heavy quark production. Whereas if you're at high scales, you don't care much about the light flavors, about the heavy mass, and you might take as a description a theory with NF plus one light flavors, and just work with that. So in a sense, at high scales, you would just put the heavy quark mass to zero and work with NF plus one light flavors and have in that sense already performed a certain resummation of the large logarithms which are which you are encountering. But as James was pointing out, what is state of the art are the so-called interpolating schemes, where at close to threshold you're working in a fixed flavor theory, whereas at high scales you would like to perform a resummation of the large logarithms and work with the resum theory. So there are two important aspects associated with this treatment. First of all, you have to perform mass factorization, because what you're doing is, in a sense, you have to do a matching between two distinct theories. On the one hand, you're at low scales where you have a theory with just NF partons plus a heavy quark, whereas at the high scales you have a theory with NF plus one partons, and they are a priori different, so you have to do a full matching calculation in quantum field theory. And if you perform this mass factorization, then this involves both the heavy and the light components of the structure functions. And why is that? That is because you have diagrams at next to leading order. You have diagrams like this, where you have a light quark coming out of the proton and radiating off a gluon, and then this gluon splits into a heavy quark pair. Now, these diagrams in a theory with at low scales, in a theory with just a heavy quark mass, these would go with a heavy quark coefficient function, whereas at high scales you would at some point associate these contributions with the theory which just has NF plus one light flavors. So at some point you have to say you just have to introduce a cut up to which you cut in the invariant mass of a heavy quark pair, up to which you put the contributions like this with your light flavor with your light flavor coefficient functions and your light flavor structure functions, and above this cut in the invariant mass, where you can really resolve this Q-Q-bar pair, then you would associate this with this particular diagram and diagrams of that type with a contribution to the heavy quark structure function. And in addition, you have then also you have to put certain matching conditions which have to hold through next to leading order if you want to work at that accuracy, and which you have to solve consistently in order to match these two theories. And if you just look at the kinematics of say HERA data, then this is important, because bulk of the HERA data, or large parts of the HERA data, are at x of say 10 to the minus 4 and at rather small Q-scale values of say below 100, and also alpha s is large at these low scales. I mean this whole procedure has been worked out very nicely in this paper by Chuvakin, Smith and Van Erven. And I have nothing new to add there. What I just want to point out is that if you're worrying about small effects at next to leading order, then this is a particular point where still work is needed, and some care has to be taken that if you want to use a variable flavor number scheme, that the implementation has to be done correctly and precisely also. Okay. So that was the part about the heavy quark coefficient function. Now I would spend some time on the missing three-loop splitting functions and just explain a little bit about how this can be calculated, how these quantities can be calculated. There are various possibilities. What the way we chose was using the optical theorem and the operator product expansion, which allowed to basically write the imaginary part of the forward Compton amplitude in terms of coefficient functions and operator matrix elements. And the forward Compton amplitude can be directly related to the structure functions. So if you take this approach and take it to the Partonic level, then what you're looking at is the imaginary part of diagrams where you have a photon scattering off a parton plus loop corrections. And this is basically the forward Compton amplitude. And then on the right-hand side, you write down the expansion which you get from the operator product expansion, where you have loop corrections to the operator matrix element plus the coefficient functions times some renormalization factors. And then you want to use this setup to calculate Mellin moments of the corresponding quantities, to calculate Mellin moments of the coefficient functions and of the operator product, of the operator matrix elements. Now in that setup, you still sum over all Mellin moments here. This is the sum over the over n with a factor 1/2x to the power n. Now there is a nice trick to project on the nth Mellin moment. If you use the identity that 1/2x is just minus the scalar product of the quark times the photon momentum divided by the photon momentum, then you just have to differentiate it n times with respect to the quark momentum, and afterwards you just nullify the quark momentum, and that from this sum will project you precisely onto the nth moment. And also the nullification kills you all the loop corrections to the operator matrix elements, so that with this projection you're left with something very simple, which gives you direct access to the quantities you're really interested in, namely the coefficient functions and the renormalization factors. And from the renormalization factors, you get then the anomalous dimensions which you're after. So in this setup, you have a natural relation between the parameters of the theory, like the coefficient functions and the operator matrix elements and the anomalous dimensions, and the Mellin moments of the structure functions. So this is basically the upshot of this approach, which also goes back to the early days of QCD. And if you want to carry that to next leading order, then what you have to do is you have to calculate this table of diagrams. Basically, you have to calculate quark photon scattering, gluon photon scattering, then you have some ghosts, and you also want to get the gluon-gluon anomalous dimension. And since you do not get this at three loops from a coupling to the photon, you have to introduce some effective Higgs coupling, which gives you diagrams where you have a scalar coupling directly to gluons. And these additional gluonic currents have the same operator product expansion, and that means you have the same anomalous dimensions, so you can get the gluon anomalous dimensions from these diagrams. Okay. So if you now write down such a three-loop integral, and you want to get the nth Mellin moment out of that, this is an example of how you perform this. You identify the corresponding scalar diagram, which is you can write in a pictorial way like this, and you look at the corresponding momentum flow. From left to right, you have the photon momentum flowing, which is the hard scale Q, and on this fat red line, this is the say parton momentum flowing. This is this little p here. And now what you're after is just calculating the nth Mellin moment of this diagram, which by dimensional consideration has to be a factor 2 times this p momentum dot the q momentum to the power n and some number. So the trick how you get this in a quick way is you just have to perform a Taylor expansion of this propagator, because this is the only place where this p-momentum sits, and then you get a sum, basically the Taylor series, and from this sum, only the nth term in this sum can correspond by dimensional considerations to the nth momentum. So you just have to pick out the nth term of this sum, and what it does for you is a simplification, because from four-point functions, you're now down to two-point functions, but you have now symbolic powers of the associated scalar products, both in the numerator and the denominator. However, in theory, calculating two-point functions is already quite a simplification in comparison with calculating four-point functions, so this this trick sort of helps to simplify us the calculation. And then you have to perform this trick on see all the basic building blocks of your calculation, which are three loops are of three distinct topologies of the ladder type, of the Benz type, and of the non-planar type, and you have 10 of them, and you have to calculate them in a certain hierarchy, because well, standard tricks like just doing Feynman parameters or something do not work. So what you do is you try to map complicated topologies on simpler topologies, like a ladder topology is considered to be simpler than, say, a Benz or a non-planar. So you try to map those diagrams to those, and then those to those, and then all these diagrams to simpler ones. And this you do with, say, standard techniques you get from integration by parts. You just take your loop integral, you insert a total derivative here, which gives you zero on the right-hand side, then you work out the total derivative, and the total derivative then, working it out, gives you relations between complicated integrals and simpler integrals, so things you want, you consider to be simpler and things you want to calculate, and solving this large set of equations which you derive in that way, then gives you useful relations which you can use to perform this mapping. In addition, another class of relation which you encounter are so-called recursion relations, which are involved in Mellin moment n of the diagram, and you have relations, say, which relate the Mellin moment n of the diagram and under consideration to the Mellin moment n minus 1 or n minus 2 of the same diagram, plus something simpler, and this is, if you wish, a sort of discretized version of a differential equation. And you also encounter those, and you have to solve them. For example, a single-step difference equation in n for that particular diagram is given here. So this is a very short one, which fits on one line, and which you can formally solve. So if you call this diagram f of n, then this would be the solution. And the coefficients a1 and a0 would be these polynomials in n. And f of 0 would be the boundary condition at the Mellin moment n of 1. And then you have some sum over the inhomogeneous term, which is this diagram here, and which we consider in that approach to be simpler. And you can solve it formally. And then you have to put it into computer into some computer algebra code, which I've just given an example here. But the point where I want to draw your attention to is the fact that now doing this, we run into sums, and we sort of have to be able to solve these sums. And we have to learn, following that approach, we have to learn a bit more about the kind of sums we encounter. And it turns out that the sums that we encounter in this calculation, so-called harmonic sums, which first appeared in physics in the paper of Gonzalez Arroyo López and Indurain in 1979, when they tried to simplify the two-loop calculation of Floratus, Kunas, and Lacasse for the two-loop anomalous dimensions. And they have a recursive definition. So every time you add some index m1 here in the front part of your harmonic sum, that means you essentially sum over harmonic sum with index starting at m2 going to mk, and then a weighted sum with 1 over I to the power m, and yeah, you can also have negative indices, like you can have also an alternating sign up here. And the nice thing about harmonic sums is that they form an algebra. Namely, if you multiply two harmonic sums, you get out one harmonic sum. So they form an algebra under multiplication. And you can use these algebraic properties to design algorithms which allow you to solve all the sums which you encounter in a well-defined manner, so that every time you have another sum over something which was already a harmonic sum, you can write down algorithms which always work back to a basis. And in the calculation of loop corrections, the harmonic sums originate from the expansion of gamma functions. If you work in dimensional regularization, they come from the solutions of the recursion relations, as I've shown you. And they come also from sums of that type. So if you have a sum with an alternating sign and a binomial over, say, 1 over I to some power, then this will give you just a harmonic sum. And getting control over the mathematics of the harmonic sums, together with the knowledge of the recursion relation, that is really the breakthrough in technology which enabled us to perform this calculation. And I should also say that working in n-space and Mellin space isn't really a problem, since going to x-space afterwards, again, just requires an inverse Mellin transformation. But if you know the class of functions which you encounter in x-space, then this is just, you can do this analytically. And it turns out that the class of function which provide you the answer then in x-space for the splitting functions is given by the multiple poly logarithms. And these multiple poly logarithms just have a nice Taylor expansion in x, and the Taylor coefficients in this expansion are the harmonic sums. So you can go back and forth between the two languages, and you can study that even a little bit further. So you can define general sums with multiple scales, also in a recursive manner, as we've done for the harmonic sums. And then special cases from this definition are, say, the multiple poly logarithms of Goncharov, Euler-Zagier sums, or the Nielsen's poly logarithms. And you get a nice inheritance chart. Say, then in X space, you start with classical poly logs or Nielsen poly logs, harmonical poly logs, and you come to this generalized nested sums. And then in N space, you would go to the harmonic Euler-Zagier sums or to multiple zeta values. And knowing this whole chain, you can go back and forth in an analytic way, and gives you good control over the whole mathematics involved. And as a side benefit, it also brings you in touch with interesting mathematics, because people from number theory are mainly interested in multiple zeta values, and they have quite something to say there. And I find it pretty intriguing that from calculations in quantum field theory, we can make this nice bridge to formal mathematics. And okay, so just to repeat, the key aspects of the technology were that we were able to solve these loop integrals via reductions or difference equations, and that we could use the algebraic properties. A nice thing also about working in Mellin space is that you can check your whole calculation very efficiently, because at any time in the calculation, you can just say, okay, now let my Mellin moment be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and you just evaluate it, you get a number, and you can check that after a few manipulations, you get the same number. So that is very friendly for debugging, and I think without having that possibility, that the whole debugging procedure wouldn't have been feasible. But you also need very flexible computer algebra software, and we perform this calculation with FORM, which is a computer algebra system by Jos van Maasren. And in the course of this calculation, we had to make sizable extensions to the capabilities of this computer algebra program, because it turned out that with respect to a two-loop calculation of the structure function, a three-loop calculation is, say, by three orders of magnitude more complex. And we saw that both in CPU time and disk space, in the size of the expressions. And just to give a few examples, say diagrams like this we could do on a Pentium 3 of 700 megahertz, like in 2000, then diagrams like this, which go under the name of a cross double box as a four-point function, we already had to, we were glad that we had faster computers, but we already had to rely on tabulation of sub-integrals because the expressions were becoming too large and the memory requirements, and then go into non-planar three-loop integrals like this. We had to use Pentium 4 of 3 gigahertz and massive tabulation with integral tables of the order of 3 gigabytes, and we had to have a computer system, which computer algebra system, which could handle this. Okay, so just to show you some results which we have obtained so far, normless dimensions in Mellin space. I've chosen a compact notation with the shifting operator in N, just to get the other results on one transparency. So this is just to remind you of the one and two loop results. And then we got the fermionic pieces to the non-singlet anomalous dimension at three loops, which in the same representation can be written there. And you get a lot of harmonic sums, say in S12 and S13 and so on and so forth. And with this knowledge about X space, N space representations, we can also give an analytic representation in X space, which contains harmonic polylogs, ordinary polylogs, logs, and so on and so forth. And the terms in red here, I'll come back to in a minute. This is the large X limit. These terms determine the large X limit. And we got a nice cross check on them. Since for phenomenology all these lengthy formula are a bit not very practical to use, we also provide easy to use parameterizations which have the correct endpoint limits, like for x going to 0, x going to 1, and fit to some smooth polynomial at intermediate ranges, and say are correct to say 5 digits in that case, but you can certainly get more precise representations if you want. And if you now take these results and compare this to these estimates from the fixed moments which I mentioned so far, then this is the piece proportional to nf squared that was known already from the work of Gracie, and now this is the piece proportional to nf. The red line is the exact one, and this dashed lines were, say, two extremes which were obtained on the basis of some ansatz for the functional form. And you see that this ansatz and the fit to fixed Mellin moments works pretty well for large x, but it fails at small x, say below x of 0.1 or 0.01. So that is where you still have to rely, you still have to wait for the exact calculation. And since you basically cannot rely on the parameterization, because these error bands basically reflect the choice, the assumptions which went into this fit. So if you come up with some other assumptions, you might get a larger or a smaller error band. Basically, this is beyond that. We wouldn't have any knowledge if we were just working with the estimates from the fixed moments. Okay, yeah. All right, so since we're actually not only calculating the anomalous dimensions, but also the full structure functions, we also get the three-loop coefficient functions in the same run. And they are numerically the most important pieces of the next leading order corrections, except for the longitudinal structure function, which in the ratio of the longitudinal over the transverse cross-section, you already need for a complete next leading order analysis. So this is the fermionic non-singlet piece given here in this easy-to-use parameterization. The exact form would be a bit lengthy. This is the same for the coefficient function for F2, which would then go in an n-cubed analysis. And let me just finish with showing a few applications which we could do with this result already. Namely, in the large x limit, you know that you do require large corrections, large logarithmic corrections, due to soft and collinear regions in your Feynman diagrams, and you can resum those corrections. And if you do this for the coefficient function, then you can basically write down an exponential, which resums then all these large logarithms of log 1 minus x over x, or an n space of log of n, to the next leading accuracy. And doing this to the next leading accuracy requires a function g3, which needs some coefficients, which are called a3, b2, and d2 dis. And these coefficients we could determine exactly. So the fermionic pieces we could determine exactly, and for the non-fermionic piece, we still have to rely on the estimate from the fixed moment, which assigns some sort of error, which you can debate, but this is what it is. And on this non-fermionic, on this fermionic piece of this coefficient, which is related to the large x limit of the splitting function, we got a nice cross-check from Carola Berger, and she reproduced this number and agreed with us. So that was another additional check on the correctness of our calculation, and we were quite happy about this. So if we just take this and plug this into a numerical analysis, say for this resummed exponent, you get, if you plot this versus n, you get this picture here going from leading logarithmic to next to leading logarithmic to next to leading logarithmic analysis accuracy. You get these curves, and if you just fold the resummed exponent with the typical input shape to assess the type of k-factor, roughly speaking, which you would get at large x, then you see this picture here. You're going from leading log to next to leading log to next to leading log. You see a nice convergence, but on the other hand, you also see that in the large x region, you do get quite sizable corrections beyond, say, the accuracy of next to leading order. So what I think would be interesting is to look at next to leading order plus next to leading log resummed perturbative analysis in this regime, because what is usually done in PDF analysis is, say, making an ansatz for F2 for the data, for F2 data as F2 QCD times 1 plus some polynomial which parameterizes higher twist divided by Q squared. And this sort of ansatz mixes certainly the 1 over Q corrections with higher, with leading twist higher order perturbative QCD corrections. And often these polynomials peak also in the large X region. So it would be really interesting to assess on the one hand the evidence for higher twist, and on the other hand, check that against these resummed analysis. So that brings me to the summary. We do want high precision analysis for deep inelastic structure functions. On the one hand, because we have very accurate experimental data from HERA, and on the other hand, we want to take this information from HERA and carry it to the LHC in order to provide very precise input for the pattern luminosities there. We learned a few things, mainly about about nested sums, Mellin moments, and that it's quite a nice tool to solve multi-loop integrals. I would like to add that this formalism has a wide range of applications. You can basically try to attack other structure functions, like the Fodan structure function, or try to get other distributions at three loops. So there is a wide range of applications, and we have so far non-singlet fermionic pieces at three loops done. This is what I've presented. We have more results on disk, and the completion of the calculation is underway, and I hope in the end we'll get a new level of precision for the phenomenology of deep inelastic scattering and hard hadronic interactions. Thank you.
Questions for Sven? You want coffee?
Yeah.
But just to understand, the non-singlet is complete, right?
The non-singlet, we have the fermionic terms. The non-fermionic terms, which is leading color, we are basically about completing it. And then you still have to do the singlet, but we are also pretty far there, so this will also be done shortly after the non-singlet. So the difficulty is not running a large number of diagrams, but actually doing all the topologies. So because they rely in a very strict hierarchy upon each other.
Others? Okay, we're not too far behind schedule, so why don't we try to return at the scheduled time of 10 after or very shortly thereafter. Thank you. Thank you again, sir.